Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Attention, you maggot. This is Tom. I'm with Jeff, the ultimate puke. Jeff.
Yep.
I'm just kidding. I'm just using quotes from Sergeant Slaughter. I'm not being mean to you.
Depends on the day, but yeah, I appreciate you clearing it up though.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I am pro Sergeant Slaughter face. I am definitely not pro Sergeant Slaughter heel, but that's what we're here to talk about though. So
mark.
But another week, though. Hey, we're this week actually Royal Rumble at the end of the week, and so we're talking Royal Rumble, and you know, hopefully we got a good show coming up this Sunday. We'll see.
I have met Sarge in person a number of times.
We both met. I met him once. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. The first time I met him was at a charity fundraiser. It was a dinner of B-list celebrities. Okay. Like, it was run by Al Borland from Home Improvement.
Okay? Oh boy.
So it was a bunch of people like him. Like, it was like a former president on 24. Okay. It was like people like that, like the one that was like a traitor president. Okay. So it was just these random people, and Sarge was there, and nobody really knew him. Nobody cared about him. I just stood next to him and shot the shit with him for an hour. So gave him someone to talk to, and I was just mesmerized. It was great. It was awesome. So I love Sarge. Super nice guy. He's exactly how you would expect. First time I ever saw him was at 4 a.m. at the Carnegie Deli in New York City the night before WrestleMania 20. So we share many, many random moments together. But I'm pumped to cover this one. You know, he's obviously a good guy that was playing a character, all kidding aside. But we're gonna cover a lot of stuff, man. So I'll just quickly share, you know, I wanted to cover this because it gives us a chance to talk about, you know, the Ultimate Warrior as champion, you know, experimenting with guys other than Hulk Hogan during this era, such as Warrior, such as Macho Man. You know, you have the controversy of obviously them not doing the WrestleMania 7 outdoors at the LA Coliseum. You have Sergeant Slaughter as an Iraqi sympathizer, which, I mean, can't imagine doing that now, but then again, they've kind of done that now over the last decade. So who knows, right? But there's just a lot of moving pieces to this one. You've got the involvement of the Macho Man. We're building for WrestleMania 7. So hell of a lot of stuff to cover. This match fascinates me for all of those reasons. Why did you want to cover this one?
This is one. Yeah. You threw this one on our list. We were kind of debating some different Royal Rumbles and, you know, some different, or, you know, Royal Rumble matches that we wanted to cover. And this was one, it kind of jumped out of me because this is the, as long as we've been doing the show, this is the first time we're talking Sergeant Slaughter really. And so, kind of interesting, especially, and I think it's a good one because there's a lot of, a real world events that dictated some of this. And so we've always kind of said too, like, you know, when you kind of blend that real world kind of, you know, work shoot type stuff. Now what they were blending with was obviously not great, which we'll talk about in an actual, like, you know, war. But you know, it's one of those where I'm glad we're talking about Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah. I actually Starcast, and he was right inside the door. And so when you walked in down into that kind of vendor's room, like, I think he was there every day, I think, and huge. Like, you always forget that, like, unless you've actually, like, you know, in the ring there, you know, you kind of relate to, oh, you know, they're just kind of doing what they do, but he's huge. He's like 6'5", 6'7". Like, you know, he's a presence when you see him, and he still, I say still lives the gimmick. Like I always wonder what his home life must be like, but he's out there. And yeah, I think, so like I said, I know we were talking off the air too about digging up our old action figures, you know, wrestling action figures. And I know I had him. And so that's just another one. So yeah, just, I know, a big Sergeant Slaughter fan on this end, at least, like I said, face Sergeant Slaughter. So
agreed.
So good stuff.
Well, yeah, no, I'm really pumped to cover this one. So let's get right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So Jeff, we were talking about this before we went on the air, because we were both pulling up the WWE Network. How awesome were these posters, these covers, VHS yes. covers, whatever you want to call them at the time, for these shows, man? Dude, this was, if you remember, and I believe was the first year they did it, where they just had a bunch of guys kind of walking down an alley, and they were all drawn like cartoon characters. Go back and look at them, pull them up online. But dude, they were just phenomenal. So,
and I was I was curious too, just the year before this, 2 years before this, because we're only on like the fourth Rumble, it was just like headshots of the wrestlers. There wasn't a whole lot of people. And so this was the first time, like, they actually like did a huge poster. You've got like Tugboat and Hurricane and Typhoon are on here. Like, you had Big Boss Man, like just all these different people. They kind of got away from that, because then the next year they did the same thing with kind of the people on the front. And then after that was Razor and Brett in 1993, but then you get back to it. So yeah, I miss these. Like, these are, and I'm sure people got them in their basement somewhere, but these are collectors for what they were, because then it just kind of got away from that. But this was a really cool one.
Agreed. So we're in Miami, the Miami Arena, 1991 Royal Rumble, 16,000 fans there. And it was, you know, when they were really hyping the, it's every man for himself. That was the big thing, right? And you can just, the stuff you remember from your childhood, right? I just remember Vince McMahon, there's Luke, the Bushwhacker Luke, there's Bushwhacker, you know, whatever, Butch, any man for himself, anyone can win, you know, and it's just funny. So they'd always, you know, kind of hype that up. So we start off, and man, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day. The earlier version of WCW starting off with a hot cruiserweight match was when WWE started off a number of pay-per-views with a Rockers match. So this was Rockers in a 20-minute match defeating the Orient Express, accompanied by Mr. Fuji. So, man, I actually went back and I forgot to tell you. I may have told you, I watched a lot of wrestling around the holidays, because I'm like, fuck, the last thing I want to watch is the news, okay? You know, so I'm like, I'm an early riser, and I'm like, all right, I'm about working, I'm relaxing, it's the holidays, I want some coffee, I want, like, you know, banana bread, I want to just get fat and hang out, you know. So I just put on wrestling like every morning for 10 days straight. And so I went back and watched this show as one of them. But yeah, some of these Rockers matches, man, I mean, you watch it now and you're like, well, the Young Bucks are better. Okay, well, this is 1991, asshole. Okay. And none of this stuff existed. All these moves they were creating, they did some really, really cool stuff. So love those old school Rockers matches. Maybe we'll cover one someday. Maybe we'll find the best Rockers match ever.
Best Rockers match. Yep.
Yeah. That might be something cool to look at. And so, Big Boss Man's going to defeat the Barbarian in 14 minutes. Man, that's a long time for those guys. Then the reason we're here, Slaughter and Warrior for the heavyweight championship. Then they did a little bit of a buffer, two-match buffer. They did the Mountie defeating Coco Beware. Side note about Coco Beware, again, in my watching wrestling over the holidays binge, I'm watching, and I'll get more into this when we talk about the match, but I was watching a lot of Saturday night's main events. The world premiere of Pile Driver, the music video led by Coco Beware. Oh, such good stuff. Such good stuff. Then here's a fun match. Ted DiBiase and Virgil defeating Dustin and Dusty Rhodes in just under 10 minutes. I think this was it for Dusty in the WWE. In fact, him and Dustin both went to WCW not long after this. And then the Royal Rumble match, hour and 5 minutes. Hulk Hogan last defeated Earthquake. You know, the idea of the winner going on to WrestleMania was just such a great addition, because I could see this Royal Rumble match having gotten really stale eventually. And now that it has that, you know, hey, you're going to headline WrestleMania, it just opens it up to be so much better. So this was the time where Hogan, I think he won two in a row or two out of three or something. And granted, he did get the world title shot at WrestleMania, but the two were not connected at this point. So it was just like, oh, you know, Hulk Hogan's posing. Great. Now what? So that's it, man. That's, you know, overall a pretty eventful show, a lot of good stuff. I'm really excited to hear this. Some of this stuff I've seen recently, some of it I probably don't remember. So walk us through, storyline standpoint, how we got to this match.
Yeah. So, and again, it's going to be kind of sprinkled in with some real world stuff here. And so, if I get the names wrong on some of this over the years, I'll apologize ahead of time. And so, cause it kind of changed and things like that. But so what you've got really the main feud heading into this Royal Rumble, you had the WWF World Heavyweight Champion, the Ultimate Warrior. He had actually been the champ since he beat Hulk Hogan. It was WrestleMania 6, which was April 1st, 1990. And then Sergeant Slaughter, who had actually come back to the WWF in 1990 and become a heel, sympathizing with the Iraqi government. So
yeah, why that's kind of just hit him like, hey, you want to come back and do this? And it's just funny. So, it's just amazing how the guy's kind of like at the tail end of his career. Next thing you know, he's coming back for probably a decent amount of money in a world title reign into headline WrestleMania. Pretty crazy. Oh, and as a heel, yeah, which he had never done before.
Right. And so, and there, I saw mixed kind of things like online of whether or not like he actually enjoyed this storyline or not. I think I saw more that he did not enjoy it and kind of being that anti-American. But anyways, like we've said it a few times now, but this feud, it was during a time when the U.S. was engaged in what was Operation Desert Shield. A few days, really days before the Royal Rumble, it became Operation Desert Storm. It was the Gulf War. You know, you and I were young when this was kind of happening. Obviously we were in kindergarten or first grade, whatever, but at a very stripped down level, you had really just Iraq invading Kuwait over oil and a lot of other things. And it just, you know, it was what at that time, that was what it was. And so, but it was a big deal. Like while you and I were younger it was just a big deal in the world. That's what it was. So, but during the build up to their match, you had Slaughter and who was his manager, General Adnan. They cut several really just anti-American promos. I do remember some of these promos just from like, you know, seeing them over the years and things like that, just to try and get heat. And this is at a time where you have to tie the real world stuff into it. The tensions were very high. This was like Saddam Hussein, all this other stuff. And so there was even one point where Slaughter, it was supposedly a present from Saddam Hussein. It was a pair of boots that he had sent him. And so from Saddam Hussein, who is like, you know, just, you know, top terrible human in the entire world as a dictator. And so, but they were blending Vince blending that storyline and kind of having Sergeant Slaughter kind of do this. And so really then, you know, switching gears, you're having Ultimate Warrior, though, really getting a push as the successor to Hulk Hogan, who Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan, especially at this point. You have through the 80s, early 90s, like Hogan was the star. Like there's just, it really hasn't, you know, however you feel about him, it hasn't really been a star like that since maybe Cena or The Rock or Austin. But, you know, it's debatable.
Look, it really comes down to what metrics, right? And then I'd say the only other thing too to consider is how much of a premium do you put on longevity, right? It's like, I mean, man, Austin in some ways, Hogan in other ways, you know, Cena, I mean, you know, he had a really, really long run. And, you know, it's funny, you talk about drawing money in some ways. I mean, Cena drew more money than maybe both if you factor in inflation and merchandise and, you know, so I think there's a couple people up for that discussion. Then it's like, well, you know, in terms of stardom, where do you put The Rock if you factor in, oh, he became the biggest star in the history of, or not the history of Hollywood, but the current number one star in Hollywood, and he's going to have maybe a 10-year run of that. So it's an interesting conversation, but you're right.
Absolutely. So you've got this though, like him being that, of course, Warrior winning the belt, having both belts of, you know, the Intercontinental and then the heavyweight champion. Yeah. And kind of holding both. And so, you know, having that, we've talked about that match, go back in the archives, kind of check that one out. But, and then at SummerSlam, retaining the title as well too, against Haku, Mr. Perfect, Ted DiBiase, that was kind of some of the matches he had, but then at SummerSlam, he retained the title over Rick Rude. It was actually a steel cage match. You had Macho Man Randy Savage getting involved, kind of some of his matches. It was one of the main the main event. Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man, kind of getting involved with, he was having a match with Warrior, and Savage getting involved with those, which is important for the aftermath, which we'll come back to. So you have that as well. And like you said, Slaughter actually wanted to come back. This is something that he sent a letter to Vince, from what I can find, that he wanted to be a part of this. And so, and the kind of the inspiration for this, which I did, it makes sense to connect the dots here. Like why they went with this kind of, foreign, bad guy was because Nikolai Volkov, the Russian, went over really well. And so to kind of blend those, it made sense to just kind of do that. But you have the kind of Gulf War happening at this time too, which, invasion of Kuwait and Iraq and kind of having that. And so how they played it off though, I say, or tried to, was to have Slaughter support the Iraqi cause, but more because, not like the brutality that was happening and literally a war and things like that. And like, the supporting the cause, Slaughter would say, the U.S. had become soft, weak, kind of doing it that way. General Adnan and Slaughter actually worked together in the AWA. And so you kind of had that as well too. So the kind of, things, it made sense for these guys to be paired up. Slaughter actually started wearing like a headdress to the ring. He adopted the camel clutch as his finisher. Just all these little different things. And so, really, and part of what I saw here too was like the real world kind of implications of some of this was like Slaughter couldn't really go out much. He was getting death threats. Like that wasn't fake. Like, that was not happening. He had security. And so I guess if you're playing a character, that's one way to do it and kind of build that persona. Not that it's necessarily the best character or the best circumstances, but that's what was happening. So you kind of had that. There was actually, again, unconfirmed, who knows, but that Vince actually wanted him to burn an American flag in the ring. And so they did a Hulk Hogan shirt instead. And so there was that kind of playing up as well. And so, but really at the end of this 1990, getting into 1991, after all these kind of different stories and things happening, you had Slaughter beginning to challenge the Ultimate Warrior, who had that belt since WrestleMania 6. And then really, the kind of real world implications of this one, because like I said, it really days, like, in the lead up to it is when it kind of switched over to like, what it was, and Desert Storm and all this different stuff. And so, yeah, just kind of, it's not a ton of, I say, in the ring kind of build, but outside of like the storyline, they didn't have matches or anything that kind of led to this one, but the real world implications were definitely there of what they were dealing with. So, Tom, final thoughts before we get into this one.
I got so many thoughts. I got so many notes for the match, and you hear like, man, like use the burning of the American flag. It's like, you can argue both sides of it, right? Which would be number one, of course, it's terribly inappropriate and terrible and don't do it. And then the other side is, well, it's entertainment. It's done for drama. I mean, would that happen on an episode of 24? Well, yeah, sure, of course it does, and things like that. And that's the whole point, is that it's entertainment. So in a lot of ways, wrestling's so weird, because it's like we think, oh, these are real people and this is like, but it's just, remember, it's like kind of a movie. And I don't know, it's just, it's such a gray area. It's no different than like comedy. Like, right, like comedians just say anything and do anything? Or now is it like, well, that's racist, you can't say that. Well, but it's a joke. It's not like a observation. It's just, I mean, so it's just so, I feel like you know, I'm combining a lot of things, but it's just so tricky because it's like, you know, what can you and can't you do in drama or in comedy, in entertainment, you know, that, yeah, you couldn't walk into your office and do, but I mean, if you're a character playing a, you know, you're portraying a character, and it's just a really tough thing. And I feel like there are no rules. It's just, you know, you can catch someone on the wrong day and get canceled and be in trouble, and other times not. And, you know, some of the things that USA Network is allowed, you're like, wow, I'm surprised they did that. Other things, it's like, that you have a problem with. And I don't know. It's just a really tough area. And I feel like this match, right, and this angle and everything leading up to WrestleMania 7 really encompasses a lot of that. And here we are, you know, literally almost to the day, 20 years later, and you still have these issues.
Yeah, you really threading the needle is tough. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Vince, I mean, he's always had this fascination with, you know, edgy, you know, kind of foreign adversaries as your heels. And, yep. You know, I obviously people say, well, that he shouldn't do that, and that's terrible. And then it's like, but then, you know, a franchise like the 24 TV show and Homeland and other things are built on exactly this. So it's like, well, why can they do it and Vince McMahon can't? Why if Vince does it, is it tasteless? But if it's done on 24, it's like, oh, I hate that, you know, that foreign adversary. I just always found that interesting, right? It's like, to me, you gotta, whatever standard you're going to hold 24 to, or Breaking Bad or Homeland or anything else, you should hold wrestling to. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair. It's tough because people just, they don't think of it that way. And it's, you know, and it, because they blur the lines so much, like, I don't disagree with you, but because of how they blur the lines, I think that's what kind of, but again, like Law and Order does real world shit all the time. Like, you know, and same type thing. And so, you know, rip from the headlines. They say it all the time. Like, so, but hey, why wrestling is different, who knows? But
well, and it goes to so many things that happen in wrestling where we're obviously now in 2021 beaten over the head of, this is fake, this is a work. We're going to talk about it being fake on the network right before and after we air something that we're going to present as legitimate. Right. I mean, it's really strange. Okay. It's really strange. Like, you know, the lead up to Breaking Bad isn't, you know, the adversaries, you know, talking about, you know, writing the script. Okay. So you have this really weird dynamic where we say it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. But then there's so many times on Twitter or, you know, on the internet where people are getting upset about things as if this is, you know, the NFL or NBA. It's like,
yeah,
hey guys, this is a work. So it's, they're held to this really gray kind of middle ground standard where it's not sports, it's not entertainment, it's not the news. Okay. It's just this weird little thing called pro wrestling. And it leads to some really weird situations like this.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, hey, we'll see what happens here, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
And I, you know, and the last thing I'll say is just, I'm of the mindset of, I watch wrestling for the distraction. So interjecting a war into wrestling storylines during a war, me personally, I'm not offended by anything that Slaughter would say or do because I know he's an actor. I just approach it more of the, dude, I don't want politics or, you know, world events, you know, built into my entertainment. And nowadays, everyone wants to interject it into everything. And it's like, my God, why can't football be football and wrestling be wrestling and a TV show be a TV show? I'm watching this shit to distract me from what's actually happening. So,
yeah.
Well, so I like distractions. So I'm pumped to cover this one. Again, we're at the 57 minute mark of Royal Rumble 1991. 57 minute mark of Royal Rumble 1991. Jeff, are you ready?
Let's do it, my friend.
All right, man. I'm pumped to cover this one. It's time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, here we are. So you may be wondering, why are we starting this with Slaughter in the ring? And you're about to find out here in about 4 seconds. So here comes the Warrior in one of my favorite Warrior outfit gear of all time. He's got this red, white, and blue theme going. I love this. To me, this is up there with his WrestleMania 6 one that was so iconic. And then the other one I loved was the one at SummerSlam 91 when he fought. I'm sorry. Yeah, SummerSlam 1990. I think it was when he fought Rude in the steel cage, the black one with like the neon color. So
he's got the trunks. Yep.
Dude, Warrior's cleaning house. I mean, this is like incredible outfit, breaks the flag over his knee, place going absolutely bananas. Warrior is hot, man. Fans loved him. I would like to have seen him have a longer run on top. And Jeff, I was just thinking about this. I was just thinking about this as I was getting ready for this show, but here's my fantasy booking on all of this is, why not make Warrior Savage for the title at WrestleMania and have Warrior retain and then have Slaughter Hogan as a special attraction. So I just feel like too often they went back to Hogan, put the title on Hogan. I think you could have still had the same effect of Hogan fighting for America against Slaughter and then kept the title in the, you know, Warrior Savage feud. And then remember, they went on to have that classic at WrestleMania 7. I would have made that my title match and I would have had Warrior just have a longer run. So that's me. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I feel like the experiment, if you will, with Savage and Warrior. Savage lasted a year, Warrior lasted 10 months. I would have liked both to have had a much longer reign. And I feel like it would have better served the company because it would have made them stars similar, not Hogan and then everyone else.
Yeah, I definitely, since you're trying to get like Warrior, I mean, he was supposed to be the next thing. And so it definitely makes sense from that kind of booking standpoint. This one, and like you said it, like this match started super hot. You got the Warrior, we didn't say like ripping the flag in half and shoving it in Slaughter's mouth. And Warrior really just dominating at this point, and Slaughter kind of selling, just getting his ass kicked, what it boils down to. Yeah, that was a huge bump, kind of over the turnbuckle to the outside. Side for Slaughter.
And I love Slaughter's gear. I mean, obviously he wasn't the most ripped person, but I just thought like him being a little bit bigger and older, I like the gear and the way they presented him. So Queen Sherry is out here now. Obviously there's a ton of stuff in the background about Macho, you know, wanting a piece of Warrior, gonna interfere, blah, blah, blah. He had the next I think he was entitled to the next shot after this. So he had a vested interest in the match. So there's a lot going on here, but yeah. And when I talk about fantasy booking, I think WrestleMania 1-6, if they weren't flawlessly booked in terms of main events, gosh, they were pretty darn close, but I feel like this is where, you know, 7, 8, and then 9 and then 10. I mean, I feel like we start to get on a run where they're just not as good. And again, I would have made Warrior Savage the main event because I thought they had a great feud. Then I would add Hogan and Slaughter after that. And then WrestleMania 8, you know, obviously you go Flair Hogan. And so I just think they botched 7 and 8 a little bit. Savage just attacked Warrior. And again, they're really playing this up. You know, kind of breaks the match up, which I really like. And, you know, they're now going for the 10 count, which is good. Guess Warrior should have just stayed out and kept his title. But it adds another element to this for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, he kind of got slaughtered. Now I will get into it after, but and I'm kind of been watching this just to see what happens. Saying a lot of the reviews saying like Slaughter just not in ring shape. And so I'm kind of just seeing how that plays out. He doesn't look bad. He took some big bumps at the start there. So I don't necessarily agree with that.
And he's older and bigger. I mean, he's not, look, he's not, you know, Ricky Steamboat. I mean, you know, not everyone is. Not everyone is a jacked up, you know, great cardio guy. So, okay, Slaughter right now looks kind of winded. Is he winded in real life or is he acting? Jeff, I don't know and I don't care. He's beat up. That's the whole point. The guy got his ass kicked, okay? But now here he is with the advantage in the match. That's called being a heel, okay?
Yep.
Like the heel shouldn't be a, you know, 8-pack, great shape, white meat baby face that's in great shape that wants the match to continue, right? He wants his guy to be beat up. He's happy about this. I'm looking at Slaughter right now and I'm like, you know, the guy doesn't belong in the same class as Warrior, but because of all this cheating, you know, he actually has a legitimate chance. So I love it. Again, even if he is legitimately winded because he's not in good shape, who the hell cares? He's right. The heel.
No, and that makes sense. So beating down Warrior at this point, it just kind of, you know, playing out that way. Yeah, doing a good job.
Yeah.
I would do agree. I said at the beginning, I the trunks too. So he's got the kind of face paint on his butt too. It is just a good look. And again, it playing up the America, just kind of what it is. Yeah. It looks good. It's all the tassel. I mean, this is when he was, you know, I say in his prime now, you know, looking good now. What put him in that prime? Who knows? And kind of having that, whether you know what he was on at this point. But
hey, look, you know what Warrior was taking? He was taking the same shit as every one of your favorite baseball and football players. Okay,
yeah,
you
at know, this point, like, yeah.
I don't know why we. What's the difference? What do you think? The Ultimate Warrior was doing something that fucking Mark McGwire wasn't doing in the early 90s? Give me a break. Right. It's right. The same shit, you know, and I'd argue it's far less. I mean, is it healthy? No, but these guys are actors. They're not professional athletes that are competing in a professional sport. So, you know, do whatever the hell they want. So double clothesline there. Again, this isn't Steamboat Savage, nor does it need to be. But I think, you know, I've been watching some Warrior matches lately. I don't think he was ever as bad in the ring as people gave it. Now, was he stiff and hurt people? Yeah, but hey, that's not my problem. I'm here watching it to be entertained. I'm not Meltzer, you know, trying to pretend I, you know, used to be a professional wrestler and, oh, this guy's stiff. Oh, and this guy's punches are too real. Dude, I'm watching it to be entertained. The hell do I care?
Well, he had given
stiff clotheslines.
He had far more good matches than bad matches, plain and simple. That's just what
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, and some guys he didn't mix well with, but guess what? Some guys just don't mix well with other people. It's not a big deal. And you know, the Warrior character was far more important than, you know, his match style. Like, especially back then, man, people didn't care. I think we do care now more because I think the way the products are presented, especially with how many matches they have, it is driven on athleticism. It's just different than it was then. So, you know, a couple of things. I've been watching a ton of Saturday Night's Main Events, the old ones on the network. Jeff, those yep. are some of the coolest things to watch because there's stuff you don't remember. There's some great promos that you've never seen. And they're only an hour long. So they just fly through and the matches aren't long. So it's like, boom, you got a Hulk Hogan promo. Then you have a Warrior promo. Then you have a 6-minute match. Then you have a really good angle. None of this stuff you remember. Most of it you don't. It was great. Like this morning I was watching Savage Hogan when Savage was a heel and Buster Douglas was the ref. I remember it happening, but I hadn't watched it in years, if ever. And so I cannot urge you enough. Go back and just watch Saturday Night's Main Event in order from the beginning. There is so much cool stuff on there. One of the things I love is at one point they had like logos for every wrestler. And so every wrestler had a logo. They had a brand. I just felt like they did such a good job with that. Now I feel like they're so much more focused on building the company and the WWE banner than the Warrior has a logo. And I mean, I know like Roman Reigns has a logo now, but it's just, I don't know. I just thought the way they did that then was really good. Another note is the Warrior promos. He gets like, you know, like in that Destruction of Warrior doc, they made fun of him because that one bizarre like outer space promo. His promos were so much better than he gets credit for. So in ring work, slightly better, promos significantly better. And again, he should have had a longer title reign. And I think we'd look at him differently than, oh, he was a flash in the pan. Well, he wasn't Hogan, but you also have to build these guys up longer. And I think I would have just given him more time, and then maybe he wouldn't have left the company. Right. I mean, maybe he would have been a 2-year champion. And we could have gotten to a Hogan rematch eventually, or hell, we could have turned him heel. I don't know. But I really wish they would have done more with him than taking the title off him and lost him not that long after. And you could say, oh, Warrior walked out. Well, yeah, maybe Vince should have paid him more. Maybe he should have given him a longer reign on top. So it goes both ways. You know, Deshaun Watson is in a you know, argument right now with the Texans because he doesn't like the way the franchise is won. So you're managing these massive egos, and sometimes, you know, that's part of the job. And maybe Vince could have done a better job managing this ego like he did with Hogan. So anyways, I just think the Warrior in a lot of ways gets a bad rap, man. I think he was better in all areas. I don't think he was, you know, I think that, yeah, he had an ego. Yeah, he was difficult, but so are a lot of musicians. So are a lot of artists. So are a lot of actors. You think Tom Cruise isn't a pain in the ass? I mean, come on, right? Like, it's the same. It's the same.
We've heard it. Balance. Right.
Balance.
Yeah.
Pain in the ass, dude. So, what else do you have? Hey, let me give you one more on this.
Go for it.
Slaughter has him in the camel clutch here, wearing him down. Again, slow match, but dude, it's entertaining, and you truly had no idea who's going to win this. And I'm really digging it so far. When you go back and watch the Saturday Night Main Event, dude, the personalities of the wrestlers and of the announcers is just so much better than this scripted bullshit. Now, one thing I was thinking the other day, I was watching Jesse Ventura, you know, he's just great on commentary. He was great during the interviews. He was being a little bit of a heel. I just compare him to like a Tom Phillips, right? Just some nerd that has no personality, no character, nothing. And maybe that's what Vince wants now. Maybe that's the vision for his product. But man, when you had Roddy Piper, Mr. Perfect, Bobby Heenan, Jesse Ventura, you know, even Vince himself on commentary and doing the interviews, and you sprinkle in a Mean Gene, that the product was a million times better. So go back and watch this Saturday Night Main Event and tell us what you think. But those are some of my thoughts on the product in this 1991 era.
Yeah. And you and I had been trying, we had said it the other day, you got Warrior running the ropes now. We wanted,
it's kind of his version of hulking up, I guess. Right. He's running the ropes, and man, I always loved that shoulder block, dude. That's just such
and here comes Sherry again into the ring, carrying the scepter, that, you know, normally Slaughter has. Yeah.
Macho King has.
Sorry. Yeah. Duh. Hello. Looking at Slaughter kind of selling. Yeah. So
talk Warrior about underrated. Talk about underrated. Sherry is a performer. My God.
And I will talk, I am actually going to talk about that in the aftermath a little bit. Yeah. Cause she was in the review. And so, yeah,
it was Warrior getting ready to beat up Sherry. Keep in mind, this was a different time.
Yep. Yeah. You can get away with this a little bit easier.
Liz would take a bump. Sherry would take a bump. I mean, the baby face is, you know, about to throw a woman out of the ring.
So Macho is now at the side of the ring, like we said, kind of getting involved in kind of what he was doing. Yeah. And so interesting. He tossed her hard. Like Warrior tossed and here we go. Oh, and then cracking Warrior over the head with the scepter of the Macho King.
Just one of the most iconic, for as good as this was, it's the polar opposite of Scott Hall with the taser on Goldberg, right? Like a schmoz finish. Like, how good was that scepter? And look at Warrior like selling it, dude. I mean, he is like motionless.
So again, you've got both guys kind of laid out.
The Iraqi sympathizer, Sergeant Slaughter, is your heel champion, and he has beat the Warrior.
So there you go.
Wow. Hebner has no idea what happened. Man.
Refs, blindest human beings on the planet. Yep.
God, there is a lot more to talk about. We'll do it in the aftermath, but dude, just, I don't know, man. I guess maybe it's just like me during this era. I'll just tell you before we head off to the aftermath, you know, this match, Jeff, I mean, by athletic standards of like match quality, I mean, you could argue it was bad or that it sucked, but it's like, those 12 minutes to me were just awesome and entertaining. And like, there's just a lot of cool stuff there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I, you know, again, every match now is way better from an athleticism standpoint, but that's just good shit.
Yeah. You just don't. Yeah, absolutely. So
Slaughter hoisting the purple belt, the purple warrior belt. I mean, people booing the shit out of him. He's got his drill sergeant music, man. Again, maybe tasteless. Maybe they shouldn't have done this, but in terms of just pro wrestling heel heat, my God, is this good shit. So Jeff,
yeah,
let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. Initial thoughts.
Match was fine, you know, nothing to kind of brag about, but at the same time, from the storyline perspective, it made a ton of sense. So, it was fine. I'm not jumping out of my chair for it, but it was good stuff. Your thoughts?
So I just like this shit way more than you do. And there's nothing wrong with it. This era and, I just think this is like off the charts good, man. Again, if the heel heat and so good. Now, interestingly enough, I still have the network on. This is the promo for the LA Coliseum WrestleMania.
Yep, I got it on too.
Remember, this is when they were going to do the outdoor show, and obviously there's some different stories as to why they went indoors. Man, that would have been fun though. Is it like an outdoor show?
Yeah, like who, especially like then, like just what it was. Yeah, like that would have been like just totally different. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just trying to think of the first true outdoor WrestleMania. And I know someone is listening and can think of it right away. I mean, because you can't like Safeco WrestleMania 19, that had a dome over it. Okay. Obviously New York City the first truly outdoor one?
Looking up here.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up, but the WrestleMania 7 originally supposed to be in the LA Coliseum. Certainly that would have been the first truly outdoor one. Jeff,
as we might expect here, like there's of course a every outdoor WrestleMania ranked. Thank you, Bleacher Report here. So WrestleMania 9 is 5. That was Caesar's Palace.
Okay, so yes, that would have been the first truly outdoor. Now that wasn't a stadium, but it was outdoors. Okay, that's fair. So, what
else? You had 26, which was Phoenix.
I was there and I can't even remember if they opened the roof or not, but even that's kind of like indoor outdoor. That's not outdoor outdoor.
Yeah. 25, 6, 7, 8 Sun Life Stadium,
Miami. Yeah, yeah. I was there.
And then,
Orlando was outdoors, truly outdoors.
24 was the Citrus Bowl.
Yep.
That was Florida. And then they have the number one, it would have been 19. It's Safeco Field.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if that, like, I'd consider that outdoors, although they may have had their stadium open, but I don't think they did. So that's more like open air than open.
So I think nine would have been the first true at Caesars. Yeah.
So there you go. But 7, man, at the Coliseum would have held, I mean, depending on how many seats they sold, they could have hold 110,000 for wrestling, I bet.
Yeah. So
anyways.
Okay. What do we got here?
I like this.
Oh, go ahead.
Clearly, but I'm curious what everyone thought in 1991, and then we can give ours.
Yeah. What do we got? So obviously following his loss on this one, he started going after Savage. They ended up having a steel cage match. It was at Madison Square Garden. Savage actually won that one with some help from the Sensational Sherry. You had him, he attacked Sensational Sherry, Sherry after this match. Warrior again, just unsuccessful, losing steel cage matches to Slaughter as well too. And Sherry again, just getting involved in all these, eventually led to the Warrior and Savage career versus career match, WrestleMania 7, which Warrior ended up winning that one. So, Slaughter defending his title, a few different people. It made sense because he was always pro American as well, but Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Duggan ended up winning a lot of these ones, but it was count out or DQ, so never actually won the belt, but kind of taking him on quite a bit. So Hogan, though, of course, kind of the big payoff to this one, though, is Hogan being named the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. It was actually, you know, it cut a promo that, you know, they didn't actually, again, didn't actually have him do it, but that he, you know, Mean Gene knew that, like, or got word that Slaughter was defacing an American flag and that, you know, now you've got Hogan, the, you know, pro America going after, you know, Sergeant Slaughter. So, but again, this capped off, it was WrestleMania 7, Hogan defeating Slaughter to become the champ for the third time. But kind of playing it up as well too, you know, aligning himself with Colonel Mustafa, who was the Iron Sheik, you know, really his old nemesis as well. And so they went with the Hogan feud for a while. They had a SummerSlam match 1991. It was 3-on-2 handicap. But Hogan and Warrior ended up beating Slaughter, Adnan, and Mustafa on that one. So, again, Warrior had the career ending match, if you will, with Savage at WrestleMania, which he retired from. And then this is where you start getting into the, you know, Warrior wanting to take on the Undertaker. And this was kind of an interesting story, kind of weird, fun build. And so I won't get into it too much, but what it was, Warrior, you know, aligning himself with Jake the Snake at the time after Undertaker had locked the Warrior in a coffin. And then Jake the Snake, you know, giving him the knowledge of the dark side, told him, though, that he would have to have three tests. There was a few different tests of, like, locking him in a coffin, buried alive, you know, being in a room with a cobra. Pretty much boiled down to, at the end, though, Jake the Snake had been working together with the Undertaker at the time. And interesting, though, that, like, while the stage was set for both Warrior and Jake the Snake, they never really had a big match because of behind the scenes kind of politics, pay dispute. It just never got there. And they were supposed to have a match, but it boiled back down to their SummerSlam main event again, which was the three or two versus three match and Payday. And so just, you know, kind of. It, almost unfortunate how it kind of played out and kind of what happened there.
It was because Warrior was gone after SummerSlam. Okay. And then he came back at WrestleMania 8 at the very end in that surprise. But we lost, you know, all that time. And I mean, that Jake's the Snake feud would have been really good. That's why it's like, you know, again, 2020 hindsight, but if they could have kept the title on Warrior at WrestleMania by defeating Savage and then had Hogan Slaughter as just an attraction match, then you still could have done the SummerSlam main event the way you did. You know, maybe you do another Hogan Warrior rematch at some point, or maybe a heel Savage gets the title. Again, there's a lot of different ways you could do it, but it's a shame that Warrior left there because he was a massive star, man, and he wasn't Hogan, but no one was Hogan. So he was still, okay, the second biggest wrestling star on the planet at that point. And having him have the title, having him stuck around longer would have been really good because, you know, they never really got their footing again after that. Remember, he was quickly out after WrestleMania 8. He lasted maybe 6 months, if even. And then when he came back around WrestleMania 12, I think he lasted 4 months at that point. So, you know, I just never could get on the same page, but what an iconic character. And man, I would have loved a couple more big feuds and great years out of the Warrior, because I think he's as crazy as it sounds, man. I think in some ways he's actually underrated as a talent.
Mm-hmm.
So,
nope. Yeah. Interesting just how it all played out, but how we got the write-ups here, kind of getting into the reviews. You had Warrior, the PWI ranking. He was 11, this 1991. Slaughter ended up being 36. And so, you know, still good names, but again, this is the time too, where the biggest of the big. And so, almost seems weird that Warrior was 11, but that's where it was. So, So kind of getting into this one, I could only kind of find the Wrestling Observer newsletter kind of write up on this, but and I figured I was talking about how they were, and it, almost funny how Meltzer, but Slaughter won the WWF title from the Anabolic Warrior in 12 minutes and 45 seconds. And so it speaks to the, who wasn't, like you said, at that time, like we're watching the Mountie and Coco Beware. I kind of left it on at this point. And so, yeah, maybe there were not so much, but yes, the Anabolic Warrior. Thank you, steroids. So he said,
and
yippee.
I'm just curious, if you have a problem with the Warrior using steroids, then were you also, as a journalist, waving the red flag on most other
professional athletes? Taking steroids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously Sylvester Stallone to play Rocky was taking roids. So it's like, all right, do you have a problem with actors? Yes or no? Do you have a problem with, okay, I mean, you know, Meltzer lives in the Bay Area. My God, I mean, the you know, ground zero for steroids. I mean, Barry Bonds, his hat size grew by 4 inches after he left the Pittsburgh Pirates. Okay, the Bash brothers, Canseco and McGuire. I mean, these guys were all jacked up and juiced. So it was just a different time. And furthermore, if these guys want to do that to their body, remember, there was nothing illegal about it. They weren't really breaking any laws per se, to the best of my knowledge. I could be completely wrong, but I don't think they were breaking laws. And certainly, you know, in professional sports, there were no rules against steroids in baseball at the time. So it's like, well, what are you upset about? You know, oh, you just, I mean, you should just arbitrarily know good from bad or whatever. So again, I mean, his look was a little roided up and stuff, but I mean, you know what Ultimate Warrior looked like? He looked like Sylvester Stallone. Okay. That's what he looked like. He looked like, you know, Rambo. He looked like anyone else that was in 80s and early 90s action films, you know? So it's, I don't know. Again, are you just going to say that no one should be, and then where do you draw the line? It's like, is creatine okay? Or, you know, where is it? You can't shoot yourself with anything. So just, it's just so nebulous in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, I just such a double standard. So whatever.
Yeah. So Warrior comes out wearing red, white, and blue. Thankfully the WWF doesn't condone Sergeant Slaughter. So he didn't bring General Adnan out with him, and they didn't wave the Iraqi flag to infuriate an already riled mob. Oh, they did. The first 2 minutes were great with Sarge trying to relive 1981, taking one bump after another. Well, at this point, poor Sarge is blown up, and Warrior, who basically stood still the entire time Sarge was taking these awesome bumps, wasn't in any better shape. Sherry came out again and got in the ring. Warrior press slammed Sherry and heaved her way over the top rope into the awaiting arms of Savage. That Sherry deserves to make more money than just about anyone in the company, except for a guy like Hogan, who puts people in the seats. Anyway, behind the ref's back, Savage hit Warrior with the scepter, which splattered everywhere, and Slaughter pinned him to win the title. As a wrestling match, there was nothing to this after the first 2 minutes, but give the WWF credit enough to know that these guys could only go 2 minutes without outside help. So they sent out the best outside help in the world, and really this thing was very entertaining because of those not involved in the match, 3.5 stars. So, and then speaking to the kind of larger kind of what was playing out on the real world here, at this point, does the allowable bad taste that pro wrestling thrives upon cross the line, which he thrives on that too. But anyways, this question was debated heavily over the past week throughout pro wrestling, particularly within the offices of WWF. It was no coincidence that Sergeant Slaughter's shot at the WWF title was to come just 4 days after the United Nations deadline for Saddam Hussein to withdraw from Kuwait. Vince McMahon felt that by making Slaughter his world champion, only to lose to a flag-cloaked Hogan amidst a patriotic orgy of 100,000 fans at the LA Coliseum, that would be the biggest money-making match in pro wrestling history. But just a few days before the match, reality got in the way. Now there was a legitimate bloodshed, or legitimate U.S. bloodshed in the Persian Gulf. Nearly everyone involved with pro wrestling, both in and out of the WWF, believed that the current world situation would cause McMahon to pack this angle in, while exploiting not-so-vague racial and xenophobic stereotypes as well within wrestling's normal bounds of poor taste. exploiting a legitimate war seemed to cross over the invisible line. Many within the WWF front office feared a media backlash against such an obvious attempt to heavily exploit the war. A few heavy hitters in the front office were privately considering quitting the company because McMahon refused to change his WrestleMania plans. There were inter-office arguments, even to the last minute, trying to convince McMahon to allow Warrior to win or at least change the Slaughter character. So 3.5 thoughts.
I don't disagree with any of that. I see both sides of the argument. I mean, it's so tough. One of the things, Jeff, that makes this one such a doozy is, I mean, it's like creating this character like as 9/11's playing. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, for some of our younger fans, and I was still kind of young at the time too, but it's like, this was happening as this is all happening in real time overseas. So it's not a situation where it's like, hey, they were an ongoing rival of the United States, but it's like, he was like basically part of a war during a war. And Jeff, I don't know how well you remember it, but I just remember as kids, you know, we had like the yellow ribbons, and it was, you know, it was at a time in our country when most people kind of supported whatever our government was doing. It wasn't like everything had to be 50-50 and you either loved it and hated it depending on your political affiliation. So it was a very, like, everyone was rallying around this. And so it was just it's tough to make a comparison to anything now. But yeah, it's, you know, these things are like leading the nightly news back when there were only a handful of channels. Right. And
right.
Then they're doing the promo, and then some of the stuff they're recording, not knowing what's going to happen when, you know, the Saddam Hussein deadline comes. And just a really, again, I wanted to cover this not because I have all the answers. It's just more of, I find this fascinating to discuss all of the moving pieces that were occurring. Yeah. It doesn't mean, oh, you know, we condone this and think it's great. It just means that it was interesting for sure. And wrestling's right. Interesting because it's such a hard thing to characterize. Sometimes we want to call it a sport and say, oh, steroids are bad. Sometimes we want to call it entertainment to go, oh, Sergeant Slaughter's just a character. But then some of the things he's saying would touch pretty close to home if your son or daughter was fighting overseas for the country. So then it's like, well, did it cross that invisible line? But why is there an invisible line there, but there wouldn't be on a television show? Again, just thought-provoking things to discuss with wrestling being the subject matter. Payoff score, what do you have?
I'll put this one at a 6 for me. And so, again, I think you'll probably be a little higher than me. I disagree with, like, the match made sense. Like, I don't think it was just the first 2 minutes was great. I think, like, from them selling and what was happening, I thought the match was fine. Especially, like, I agree with the point of, like, they knew their limitations. So having Sherry involved, having Savage involved, like, that, it worked. Like, from the just watching the match, like, that made perfect sense to me. So I enjoyed that piece of it. So between that and then, yeah, I think just can't overlook the kind of real world stuff. I think the behind the scenes, like you said, is far more interesting sometimes on like a match like this, but at the same time, it wasn't bad. Like, absolutely not. But like, you know, it just, it's what it was. And we did eventually, like, I think that this is a classic case though of like Vince being Vince and the businessman, because yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, if you put 100,000 people in the Coliseum to have Sergeant Slaughter and Warrior under those circumstances with like how things were playing out, it would have been gigantic. It truly would have been a Warrior versus Hogan type, you know, match, or Hogan versus Andre type match. And it would have just driven huge numbers. So yeah, I just like from that piece of it, like, it makes total sense. So I'm going to go with the 6 though.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it better. I'm going to put this at a 7.5. I just thought, again, if it was a 25 minute match, ugh, but at 12 minutes with some of the shenanigans, I think the Savage interference, especially at the end, is iconic. You hated it. I mean, you hated the heel. You're pissed off. But guess what? You were buying WrestleMania to see Hogan, extract revenge. I just might argue that maybe the Warriors should have gotten revenge, right? I guess they just didn't have rematch clauses back then because they just, these things kind of just disappeared. They didn't have as much TV to fill though either. So again, 7.5 for me. I'm saying that as someone that, you know, is okay with, you know, approaching it as entertainment and not taking it too seriously. But again, I completely understand how people would think that lines were crossed and it was in terrible taste and tough call. So as far as wrestling goes, I liked it. I thought it was a good piece of business. You put it in the middle of the card. They leave happy with Hogan winning. You get Hogan to beat him at the end. And then you got that great Savage Warrior match. So that's all I got, dude.
Excellent. Good stuff. Send him home happy, you know?
All right. Well, for Jeff and Tom, we appreciate you guys listening as always to another edition of The Payoff.